This is The Good Die Young, the podcast where we deep dive into the greatest television you barely saw. I'm your host, Les Weiler. Join me as I take you through what made these shows too pretty to live. This is The Good Die Young. Season 1, The Middleman. All right, it's The Good Die Young, The Middleman. This time, we're going through the Ectoplasmic Panhellenic Investigation, which is episode 8. I'm your host, Les Weiler, and I'm here again with John Sitton.
Hey.
Who you helped me out on an episode already.
Yes, the Sensei Ping episode.
Yes.
I always forget, because the titles are always so long, I always forget the titles of every episode, but yeah.
I had completely forgot the legitimate titles of about half of these until I had to start going back through them. The Sino-Mexican Revelation.
Yes, no, you're correct. When I hear them, I'm like, yes, I know what, yes, that is this episode that this half. Like, I love the fact that the titles are so nonsensical in a way, but at the same time, when you read them and then actually like watch the episodes, like, oh no, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the accidental conception, like, oh yo, yeah, no, that was an inadvertent Chinese dynasty heir.
Yeah.
All right, so as everybody listening to this series at this point should know, this is The Good Die Young. We're going over shows that are too pretty to live, and this time out the gate, we're going through The Middleman episode by episode, along with interviews and whatnot. So, picking through the Ectoplasmic Panhellenic Investigation, I think previously, John, we went over how you are just a general nerd and got into Middleman.
Yeah.
This episode in particular,
it's nothing but Ghostbusters references. I mean, the title even, the Ectoplasmic, you know, it's literally just every 5 seconds is another Ghostbusters reference.
Yes, there's so many of them. It's great. Ghostbusters was the first movie as a kid, I think, that I ever obsessively watched over and over in the theater.
Yeah.
I'm old, and so we're talking about like when Ghostbusters was originally in the theater. Back then, watching a movie 15 times was way more difficult than it is now. Like, there was no chance that your parents were going to buy this movie for you.
Yeah. See, I lucked out in that one of my parents was a silent partner in a movie rental store, so we had copies of
that's great.
Of like every major movie that you would want. And so as a kid, like the movies I would watch all the time were Monster Squad, Ghostbusters, and American Ninja.
Oh, that's two. Great.
Not American Ninja 1, American Ninja 2.
Yeah, we had the I think everybody in my family had one of the VHS cases that like butterflied open.
Yeah, we had like 6 of those.
Yeah, and they'd be full of 3 or 4 movies, like however many you could like cut the credits and cram onto a tape off because we had HBO.
Yeah.
And so you just take the shit out of HBO. And
same here. We would do the same thing, except our movies would be copied from legit masters from the local video rental store using their equipment, which probably shouldn't have been able to do, but.
Yeah. I remember the first time as a kid that an adult was like, okay, so we're going to put this piece of tape over the thing here, and then we're going to, we got a nicer gold-plated cable, we're going to use this one, and you're going to make 7 copies of Top Gun.
Jesus.
That never happened. That would have been illegal.
Yeah.
It would have been horrible. No one would do that. It'd be immoral. Ectoplasmic Panhellenic Investigation. Obviously, this one has to do with sororities. It has what I'm pretty sure is the second dirtiest line in all of Middleman.
I forget the line, but I think I know what you're talking about.
And I still don't think it's the dirtiest line. I think the prize for dirtiest line still goes to boy band superfan interrogation.
Yeah, there's a couple of really...
There's a couple of lines that stopped me of like, you know, maybe see family. I can't believe you let that one slide.
Yeah, you know, like the you ever wonder why he has that cane?
Yes.
Kind of thing, but...
Yeah, we've got to get there before that girl sucks the band through a hole.
Yeah.
In space. I just stopped. It's like, holy crap, I gotta pause this. What did they just say? So this episode kicks off at Middleman headquarters. Ida's tracking all the emergency channels, and voila, Tyler Ford wanders in. We haven't really seen him, I don't think, since the Sino-Mexican episode.
Yeah, I think this is the first of reintroducing him to the...
Yes, after his 2-day amnesia, which he got from getting the crap kicked out of him by Luchador.
Yeah.
And so
it's also apropos that I'm back for this episode.
So Wendy wants to immediately go down there and talk to Tyler because he's not going to remember her anyway. But Middleman is concerned that it's going to
jostle his memory,
start a cascade of memories.
Most people can be trusted to shrug off our presence, but Tyler Ford isn't most people. We identified him as a possible middleman. And that makes him a danger. When people like he start asking questions, sometimes we have to take measures.
Tyler is going around trying to piece together his missing 2 days, as you would be wont to do if you had 2 day amnesia. I love that he knows it's 2 day amnesia and calls it that.
Yeah, and he kind of acts like that's a weird. He's like, I know it's a weird thing to say, but I had 2 day amnesia.
Yeah, I think when he explains
why
it later,
I had that. I don't know, but
yeah, he's like, are you still with me? Did I lose you?
I walked beside you.
I love that Ida is also just spitting out references. They've got a 27B/6, which is the paperwork form from Brazil that he needs to get his air conditioner fixed, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so the references start early on this, and it's never just the one thing. This episode's primarily Ghostbusters, but this show's just nerdy.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I think every episode has one giant reference, and then there's a bunch of random references to other stuff scattered.
Middleman won't let Wendy go down there and talk. Ida instead goes down there and just basically shoos him away.
I told young Tyler to scram.
You made the cute boy go bye-bye?
He didn't get his memory back. Just found our address in his appointment book. Wanted help piecing together his missing 2 days.
Wendy heads home from HQ, and before she can even get into the sublet in the alley, voila, Tyler Ford again.
Yeah.
And I love that he compliments her car again. That's the same way they met last time.
Yeah, almost, and he even makes a comment, goes, whoa, weird deja vu, kind of.
Yeah, because he says, you know, the smart car is the pinnacle of engineering, next only to the Haruk bugbear. And you could see I'm glad they cast Brendan Hines in this. I don't think the kid playing Ben, I don't know if he would have put this across, but like, I know Brendan Hines from other work later. Yeah. And I feel like they got a good actor that ended up doing good stuff. I'm glad they ended up giving Tyler more and more to do.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I feel like I do know him from other stuff, but I honestly...
I'm sure it's not what his agent would ever want him to be known for, but he will forever be... There's a movie called Down in the Valley.
Okay.
With him and Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
And they get pulled into a magical portal that takes them to a world entirely governed by Skinamax porn rules.
I want to see this
movie.
And
Chris Pratt stays hammered drunk through the whole movie, and like his character's drinking through the whole movie, and he's the only one that knows what to do. Like, he fully understands how Midnight Skinamax works.
I want to see this
Scott
movie.
Scott Kahn is the cop in the porn world. Seriously, like, I think it's on Popcorn Flicks or one of the lower tier free streaming things. It's worth checking out. But yeah, Brendan Hines is just in it. They look as baffled as... There's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre with McConaughey and Renee Zellweger.
Yeah.
And they look about that level of like, better than moving a couch this weekend. Yeah. Let's just make this movie. So when I saw Brendan Hines turn up in this, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. So he talks to Wendy. It's one of the rare times where Middleman does a trope that they don't subvert it well enough, and I don't care for this one.
Yeah.
I don't like the mix-up of, oh, wow, you know... the girl in 6B, and they spend that whole conversation building up to you thinking that he's found, he even says soulmate, and you think he's going to flirt with Wendy, and then like,
do you know Lacey,
Lacey Thornfield?
Yeah.
And of course, they both worked at Booty Chest, and the mix-up is, it's easy to do, and it's right there, but I don't know, it's too close to the will-they-won't-they trope, and I just don't care about it.
I do appreciate that they didn't spend too many episodes on this.
Yes, it is resolved, thankfully, by the end of this episode.
Yeah, like they move on past it very quickly.
Yeah. It also allows for a kind of nice moment between like Wendy and one of the sorority girls who keeps trying to help her through this fight through the whole episode. We cut back to headquarters, and Dubby's already, like, they don't... She just goes back to headquarters. Like, they don't really set this one up that well. But once Dubby's back at headquarters, Lacey calls her to say, hey, Tyler came upstairs and asked me out. Lacey barely remembers him, but suddenly it's a thing. Like, Lacey's like, oh no, I do like him. He is great. And you can, this starts the whole, like, please just say something to the other character tension for the whole show.
Yeah.
I think I've just watched too much Greg Berlanti.
CW. Flash and Arrow. And
That at this point, like, anytime two characters just, like, if the plot hinges on two people just willfully not saying something in a room, I just want to scream.
Yeah, this is kind of, I mean, luckily, I think this is, like, the only episode that really has a moment like this.
It really is. And again, they don't sustain it for very long.
Yeah.
They let it pop pretty quick. And I'm buoyed along instead by an endless stream of Ghostbuster references. The call that they get that interrupts all of this melodrama is from Reitman University, which obviously Ivan Reitman. Ida plays the voicemail from the campus PD, and Middleman tells a horrific story about why he doesn't like ghosts.
It may all seem like light and magic at first, but the next thing you know, the walls are bleeding, and you've got 25 pregnant women running around screaming, "Mary! Mary! Mary!" and clawing their eyes out with knitting needles, while your own hair grows to 3 times its length and tries to strangle you.
He's seen some shit.
Yeah, and I love that Wendy always stops and, like, that's really specific. So the address that they get for the campus PD is obviously 55 Ray Parker Jr. Avenue.
We need a word with your incarcerated ghost caller. I'm Dr. Stance, and this is Dr. Zettimore of the Parapsychology Department.
The only people allowed near him are the Metro Police.
Of the Metro Police.
Yeah, and the guy's like, only the Metro Police are allowed to see him. And they just flip the badges open again and go, oh, Metro Police then. And the guy's like, all right. Like, they never explain. It's not like they have psychic paper. It's not like they ever explain the Doctor Who-ness of their badges.
Yeah.
It just works on authority.
Yeah. It's one of those that I feel like doesn't need to be explained, because it's actually kind of the one thing from Doctor Who that I was always sad about that they did, though. Oh, it's psychic paper, so people see whatever they want. I'm like, all right, well, that's a little like magic. Like, oh, we've explained it away. Here, you don't need to explain it.
Yeah.
They just always have the correct badges.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I would almost just rather let it be just social science of, like, no, if you just flip it open fast enough and say it 9 times out of 10, it'll work.
Yeah.
So a pledge for Theta Theta Gamma fraternity had tried to get into where no man had gone before, third floor of the Omega Theta New House. And in scanning him, because he swears he saw ghosts, and the campus PD are mad because they say he's made a fake, like, prank call.
Yeah.
But he swears he's seen ghosts. I love that they scan him, and once again, he has no pineal gland. The pineal gland comes up in so many episodes, and it comes up in so much sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I love that it's always their go-to psychic connection thing.
Yeah.
It even comes up in the later comic. The machine that allows basically godlike power is like a computer made of like hundreds of pineal glands. So this kid's missing his, and it allows him to pick up low frequency vibrations, which lets him see and hear ghosts. They go back to the headquarters and get Ida to make Dubby sunglasses.
Yeah, sunglasses that allow her to see that.
And I love that they don't make her, she can't hear. She can only see the ghosts.
Yeah, she can't hear them. She can only see them.
And be careful with those. Ida constructed them with the last of our neutronolons. You break it, you bought it.
Yeah, once they're gone, this is it. And I do like the fact they do reference the term neutrino wand for anyone who doesn't know what that is from Ghostbusters. That's the stick that they shoot their proton beams from the proton pack.
Back at the sublet, they cut straight to Lacey, who, of course, is always the go-to on this kind of weird stuff. Dr. Barbara Thornfield, MD, PhD, is also an Omega Theta Nu, and so Lacey's a legacy. And even though Lacey did not do this in college, I love that her mom was apparently hardcore about this enough that she just picked it up in childhood.
Yeah, that she just knows it.
And she knows all of it. She's bouncing up and down and clapping and saying all of the crap. Wendy's just standing there horrified and trying to absorb all this. There was just a fun, like, throwaway scene, and then they get to talk about Tyler. And, of course, Lacey asks her 3 or 4 times.
Like, are you okay with this?
And of course, Dubby just keeps saying, sure, I'm fine. And it's just ridiculous. Like, she's clearly not, they let it roll. I mean, this happens in Friends. It's not an unrealistic conflict. I just was screaming. I'm like, no, you guys are so rarely at each other's throats for dumb shit.
Yeah, and I don't even really feel like it was ever like at each other's throats.
Yeah.
It was very much like, you know, Lacey was very much like, I know you're upset with this, but you're telling me it's not, it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's actually making me a little upset. Just tell me that it's not okay and we'll be fine.
Yeah, there's almost a sense of like, okay, then I'm going to date him if you... Like
she's almost doing it out of spite because she knows...
Blow up and say something, come on. Yeah. Armed with all this new knowledge and leaving the Tyler situation unresolved, Wendy goes onward to the Omega Theta New House. Before she goes into the house, Middleman rattles off the Moscow rules.
Oh, yes.
The tenets by which America's agents of freedom survived under the socialist yoke.
I love the implications that, like, going into this sorority house undercover is this level of, like, infiltrating Moscow.
Yeah, and when it, like, he starts listing them off, and like at one point she's like, wait, how many Moscow rules are there? And he's like,
there's 15.
Yeah.
And he gets through like 6 or 7. They're ridiculous. Like, I think number 9 is technology will always fail you. And then they come up for the rest of the episode. She just keeps rattling them off. At some point, clearly he finishes the list because she rattles off above where he gets to in the car.
Yeah.
She turns around and pulls a I love that she looks in the back seat, takes the glasses down, puts them back up, looks back at him and goes, did you have an Irish setter?
Captain Sparks?
Yeah.
And she's just messing with him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if she just guessed really well or what. I loved it. Wendy goes in the house, meets Eleanor. Eleanor's showing her around the house. Wendy sees all these ghosts standing up on the stairwell. And they're all just gesturing wildly. Like, these don't look like scary ghosts. These look like scared ghosts.
Yeah, like, and it's funny because, again, you can't hear them. You can only see them. And they're just, they're yelling, and they're, like, trying to get her attention.
Yeah.
And they're, and she's just like, I don't know what they want, but I have to ignore the fact that they're there for right now.
Yeah, like, can't talk to them. I mean, I kept waiting for her to get busted talking to herself, basically.
Yeah.
Which they, it's one of the things they don't really pull on her. She meets Allie, who is another one of the sorority sisters.
Who's kind of mean to her a little bit at first.
I kind of thought it was a nice twist on how they play this. Allie is the super suspicious one at the start who doesn't believe that she's a real sister. And you think, okay, Allie's probably going to be the villain here. Like the one that's super suspicious from the start. And like, you know, who's this newcomer? And for just a second, I thought, all right, the in control sorority bitch is going to be the like, villain here and Eleanor is going to be some pledge.
Well, yeah, I mean, I honestly thought that this unlikable person that was just totally mean, I didn't think she was going to end up being the villain, but I did think that she was going to be like a foil almost, like that, like it was going to, I kind of figured she was a red herring, but not, but it was going to be like a, she was going to cause more problems than help.
Yeah, and it goes the opposite direction of that.
Like almost immediately too.
Yeah, because Dubby ducks into the bathroom, communicates with Middleman, who chastises her for using real names, because, of course, they've got to use their code names, Keymaster and Gatekeeper.
I also like, during the scene, she's pulling out stuff out of her bag, and one of them is an actual PKE meter from the movies.
Yes.
From Ghostbusters. So. Yeah, so
I would love to know if they stole that from another set, if that's something laying around.
Or if it was just somebody's personal, like, homemade. Because, I mean, there are places you go online and actually buy to make your own replica, fully electronic, light-up props and stuff like that. But, yeah, so, I mean, so this, you know, this other sorority girl knocks on the door and she comes out and she's like, okay, I was mean to you before, but that was only because she was around. Now you've got to help me.
Yeah. I love that. As soon as she realizes, like, you really do know the handshake, because Eleanor wouldn't let her do the secret handshake and treated it like, we don't need that here. You're sisters.
But, oh yeah.
But when Allie, like, she does the handshake and you see Allie go,
you do know the Omega Theta new handshake. Of course I do. We have to talk.
She immediately starts confiding in her, like, stuff's messed up.
Yeah, because it kind of, you know, it's the whole point of the Eleanor is not really, she seems to have more.
Yeah, she's a pledge, but they're treating her like she's in charge, which Allie doesn't quite get to tell that yet, because Eleanor just pops her head into the door and you see her get scared. So you know something's up. Like, Eleanor clearly scares Allie.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, this is an immediate flip. Allie is now on our side, needs our help, which is I thought was just great. Because I really did. I just thought she was going to be the endless mean girl for the rest of the episode, at least.
Well, it's at this point, she kind of starts to also realize that the ghosts may not actually be ghosts, because there's also people walking around that look exactly like the ghosts.
Yes. She's actually seen the girls that she's also seen the spirits of.
Yeah.
So they're wondering if they're ghost duplicates or what's going on, which I love Middleman's expletive of ghosts of the living.
Yeah.
Because... like, is that one of your sayings, or is that a summation of the situation? Like, well, both. We do a scene cutaway back to the hallway, and we get basically our only Noser scene of the episode. And it's Noser and Tyler.
Hey, guy, I don't know.
Hi, dude with the guitar. I'm Tyler, friend of Lacey's.
Special friend of Lacey's?
Hoping to be. Got any knowledge?
Lacey's a special girl. You're gonna have to sleep out in the rain if that's the way she wants it.
Percy Sledge, very nice.
What can I say? The man knows how to love a woman.
Even Michael Bolton couldn't ruin that song. Don't tell anyone I said that.
Guy I don't know is starting to look like guy I've known my whole life.
Yeah, I like the fact that Tyler quickly kind of... everyone likes Tyler. Like, that's also kind of his personality. It's just everyone likes him.
Yeah.
Like, even people who aren't supposed to like him, just like him.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. Like, it's kind of his superpower in this show.
Yeah, I know. He's just kind of effortlessly cool and likable, and so is Noser.
Yeah.
And yeah, they very quickly, by the end of the series, are just thick as thieves and co-producing albums and or making huge plans. So back at the sorority house, Dubby's following the ghost around the house. They lead her down to where all of the sorority photos are, like the pictures of all of the sisters in the house. And they're trying to get her to see something, but again, they're mute. They're just gesturing wildly. This is where I really was waiting for her to get busted talking out loud.
Yeah.
Because she's just standing down in the main house.
Yeah, it kind of felt weird that didn't happen in that scene. Like, they kind of overdid it to a point that it was more so than they've done in the past.
Yeah. And it really played in because they then hoodwink her. Somebody comes up behind Dubby as she's standing there, and she's just starting to figure out, like, it's not who's in the photo, it's what's missing from the photos, and she's starting to piece together a little bit of what they're trying to tell her, maybe, and then, boom, there's a hood over her head, and she's taken away. So before she can get taken away, she hits the middle watch alarm.
Yeah.
And it's a false alarm.
Yeah.
They drag her outside for a sorority thing, and this is the closest to, like, an info dump that she gets on the situation. Because Allie sneaks forward, like, still doing, like, the obnoxious clap and big smile, and starts to just tell Dubby through, like, clenched smile teeth.
Yeah, like, this is the only way I could talk to you, is for us to do this, and she can't hear me if I talk at this level, and you need to listen closely, and here's everything that's going on.
Dubby points out that none of them know the cheer, and like, that's, I love that that's the giveaway. Yeah. Like, everybody on the steps, there's all these sisters, and like, the leaders of the house, the ones that are duplicates to the ghosts,
yeah,
they clearly don't know the chant. They clearly aren't doing the clap right. Yeah. They don't know any of the sorority stuff. And that's when Allie tells her, yeah, the senior board started acting weird. This new pledge came along. They're treating her like she's in charge. I don't know what's happening, but something's up.
Yeah, because no one but me and you and a few other people know.
Yeah, the actual handshake and stuff, which Dubby's an imposter. But regardless, yeah. About that time, the middle watch alarm pays off.
This is actually one of my favorite moments where he just kind of bursts in like he's going to do something and then...
Hey, big bro! What a pleasant surprise!
Hey, sis! Afternoon, ladies. I apologize for the hasty entrance, but mother, our mother...
Different fathers. She had one crazy night in...
Tijuana.
Yeah. I think she introduces him as her brother.
Yeah, she's like, oh, it's my big brother coming to visit and see that I'm okay. And right, bro?
Weird laser gun on his hip and like, yes, from the campus police. Like, he says something about, like, mother, our shared mother. Different fathers, obviously. Wild night in Tijuana. And I love her look of, like...
I'm Cuban.
Campus police?
Well, why can't you be the illegitimate, disreputable one?
Like, I love her immediate, like, you couldn't have grabbed for a better lie than that. It's always great to watch the middleman play awkward.
Yeah.
It just, Matt Keisler cracks me up, I think, just nearly every time. And as the series goes, he just got smoother and smoother. The whole cast just got better and better at rolling through these things. His half-line justifications, he's just not great at it. We cut back to the sublet. And Tyler and Lacey are having a flirt. Tyler's looking around the apartment. And again, they do the everything in this apartment that is her roommates is what Tyler comments on. So he picks up a zombie movie that's Dubby's. He looks at a painting that's Dubby's.
Well, the first thing with the zombie movie is like, you watch this garbage? And then she's like, no, that's my roommate, Wendy's. And
yeah, and there's just a moment there where you're like, okay, all right, well, he hates that zombie movie.
Yeah.
And of course, then they kiss.
Yeah.
Which, it's not a huge romantic moment, but Lacey and Tyler kiss. It really looks like it's kind of where this is going. We're just going deeper and deeper into this this problem that's going to arise between Lacey and Dubby. Back at headquarters, meanwhile, Ida's given the rundown on who Eleanor is.
Kid's got a record a mile long. National Merit Scholar, recipient of the prestigious Egon Spengler Memorial Award for Excellence in Physics, shortlisted for the Evo Shandor Medal.
Fits the evil genius profile.
Fits the middleman profile. And we are in the market for someone who can actually complete a mission.
I was attacked.
With flowers and a song.
She was a finalist for the Ivo Shandor Medal, which I love that they went a little deeper for the Ghostbuster reference on that one.
How in the eyeglasses of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg did you manage to break yours when we so desperately need confirmation?
How in the eyeglasses of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg did you manage to break yours is one of the weirder middleman expletive statements, I think, in the whole series. And of course, I love that Dubby just replies back with something she made fun of earlier of like, no, don't yell at me about breaking those. Moscow rule number 9, technology will always fail you. And Moscow rule number 11, keep your options open. It took me a second to think, like, what possible other option would they have? They've got the fraternity kid with no pineal gland.
Yeah.
So they go back.
He can see them and he can hear them.
Yes. So they go back and find Lewis, who is right back in the pink dress that he had to infiltrate the sorority house before.
Yeah.
It's the only outfit. It's not the only outfit we see him in. Later we see him in the John Belushi sweatshirt, the college sweatshirt from Animal House. But I love that he's right back in the same outfit.
If I'm not mistaken, he never got out of it. Like, they just, like, they found him right after he had gotten left out, and all he did is he went and sat on a park bench, which is where they felt like he hadn't even gone home yet to change. Yes. He's just been wearing this dress the entire time.
Just kind of shell-shocked.
With a wig on, with a bad wig and a dress. And
so, Dubby and Lewis, the frat pledge,
I do love the fact that his name is Lewis.
Yes. He goes back into the fraternity, or into the sorority house with her to translate, finds out that all of the top-tier sorority sisters in the house were lured to what was supposed to be like a fraternity party, but it was in the physics building across campus.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is where Eleanor did all of her shenanigans. Middleman hears all that on the watch. He heads over to the physics building. He finds a lab full of nerds hooked up to machines, which he recognizes as a quantum processor, and it is projecting their souls into the leadership of the Omega House. They're going to take down the sorority house by throwing a party so wild and debaucherous that it will get the entire Greek system shut down.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Project X. Like, I don't know what party they think they're going to throw that's going to actually end the Greek system, but if it were possible, it would have happened, I feel. Like, I was just listening to it going, I don't think there's a Caligula-level thing that would fully in this, but that is a bizarrely of all the things to go at to take an organization down, like, we're gonna have you guys throw a party that ends you.
Well, I mean, I do actually get it, you know, it's, they're making them throw a party, which you would expect at a fraternity, and, you know, basically that it, on the surface, it looks like they destroyed themselves.
That's true.
That these kids, you know, did some plan to destroy them.
And I'm thinking about it from a If a fraternity threw that party, it probably would just get them bragging rights.
Well, I mean, it, one of two things would happen, especially in nowadays things. I mean, it could get them like shut down as a fraternity or fines or whatnot, depending on how bad it is.
But this seems like a particularly mean scheme because this is going to personally destroy reputations as well.
Yes.
Like, this is going to make everybody involved in this house just look awful.
Yeah.
Which it really is just a very cruel revenge play for not letting Eleanor into the sorority, because she reveals later that she pledged and she hates those stuck up bitches. I don't know, the nerd versus sorority, like nerd versus Greek. This episode has some of my favorite references and favorite jokes for being kind of suspended on one of my least favorite plot setups.
Yeah.
This is one of the few episodes that deals with two or three tropes that I am closer to tired of.
Yeah.
But it shores it up by basically making it the episode full of the references to my favorite childhood movie.
I agree with that. Yeah. No, it does. And it's, you know, I do appreciate that, you know, on one hand, it's, you know, the nerds are the villains, but at the same time, I don't really, like, I feel like the nerds are also the victims here in this as well. Like, yeah, they're being, you know, yeah, they're taking over the bodies of sorority girls, but Eleanor's the villain. She is like, she's like, no, you guys are going to do this for me because I want revenge. Not because you guys want revenge. I'm just putting you in women's bodies so that you can grope them while you're inside them. You know, which I think there is a reference to them doing that or something like that.
You never get a scene of the other nerds that Eleanor has hooked up to the quantum processor. You never get a scene of them planning this or anything. Like, it is Eleanor's plan.
Like, they're following her to the letter.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that they're necessarily pawns in it, but she's the evil villain, and they're closer to henchmen at best.
Yeah.
I love that Eleanor jumps herself in, like, her scheme is to jump herself into middleman. So she dives down onto one of the tables real quick, throws the helmet on, and I like how the quantum processor works, that it just, you don't have an option in it.
Yeah.
Like, aim it at someone. They don't have to be hooked to a transference machine. There's no two hats that exchange brains or anything. She points it at middleman, and it like bumps his soul out of his body, and he's standing there next to his body. And of course, then she runs off in middleman's body.
Yeah.
You know immediately that this isn't going to work, because there's so many particulars to his speech and so much weird knowledge that they know, that Dubby catches on really, really fast that there's something up with Boss.
Oh yeah, no, of course. It's one of those things that literally, I think she even like looks at the way he's walking and it's like, are you okay?
Because he's
like
pursing his hands in front of him.
Yeah. And she's just kind of like, something's off with your body language, not just what you're saying.
Dubby heads back to the sublet. She sees middleman on campus and she thinks he's being weird, but lets it go for just a minute.
Yeah.
Goes back to the sublet. Tyler and Lacey are there. They're about to watch, Dubby says she's going to sit down and watch Zombies of Moratau, which is the zombie movie that Tyler said he hated. And they have it out. Like, he gives her a little crap about it.
Yeah. He starts, he's like, how could you even watch that? Because
they're
gore
free.
Yeah.
That's his whole complaint against him, is that they're sanitary zombies. Like, these are gore free zombies. And I like her explanation that it's a zombie palate cleanser, that it is like the shittiest of all zombie movies. And so you watch it and you get disappointed in the whole genre.
Yeah, it's so bad that it makes you disappointed at the whole genre. And then you watch a really good one like Night of the Living Dead, and suddenly the genre is amazing again.
That it's a zombie palate cleanser.
It's almost like you're watching it for the first time.
Yes.
A zombie palate cleanser. That's pure genius.
He and Lacey head out for vegan food. Dubby opts to not be the third wheel at a vegan restaurant. And instead, she does something a little unexpected. She calls Allie, the sorority girl.
Yeah.
Who specializes in bizarre love triangles and advice.
Appreciate that that's a specialization.
Right? Like, that's her major or minor.
Yeah.
So Allie is sneaking off to a bathroom to talk because there's a really loud party going on. And Dubby's surprised because she would have thought that the party would have been canceled, because when she ran into middleman on campus, he was like, oh yeah, everything's good. Everything
took
was destroyed.
Took care of it.
Yep. Handled. She says, no, I would have thought Eleanor would have canceled it. And like, well, ask your brother. He's here. So as soon as she says, yeah, your brother is the party, Dubby knows.
Yeah, she knows what's going on.
This middleman's never been the party. Lewis the Pledge knocks on her door and has a message from middleman, who is clearly just ghost yelling at him next to him.
Okay, man, calm down. He wants me to do this word for word. Wendy, this is your boss. Eleanor has inhabited my body, and now I'm afraid my communication with you is only possible through this young vessel.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
We must act quickly. Now that I've experienced for myself what Eleanor is capable of, I fear she may not only be a threat to the Greek system, but to the world at large.
Yeah, it's actually a really good moment, because again, in these, you don't see the middleman at all. Like, it's just him explaining what's going on. And I actually like the guy that plays Lewis, that he does really well in that, in kind of pantomiming, like, people yet, like, he's having this conversation and things going on that no one else can see. And he's really good at actually making you feel like there is someone there yelling at him.
Yes, his name is Jeremy Lelliot. NCIS episode, something called No Pillow Fights.
Okay.
And then this. But yeah, I agree. He does both the middleman, and then in the next scene, or a couple scenes from now, he gets to do the same thing with all the sorority girls, where he's having to directly translate.
And then he goes into their personality as well when he does it. So it's like, he's like, Dubby, blah, 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 blah. You know.
Yeah, he does. He makes it really fun. And gets to do a lot with what would have been a kind of small part otherwise.
Yeah.
Now that Dubby knows for sure that middleman's possessed, they go back to the sorority house, Omega Theta Nu. The party scene, one of the tiny things that I noticed in the background, someone just walks by with Edward 40 hands. He has two 40-ounce beers duct taped to both hands.
Yeah.
So he's just got big silver mitts with beers. And then somebody just wanders by. They did a good job of extra casting out a college party, considering that there's not just a crush of people in there. I mean, they didn't go get like an extra 100.
Yeah, no, it's pretty much the people that were in the fraternity, you know, the sorority already, and probably like a few extra on top of that. So they made good use of what they had.
Yeah. They decide that they're going to have to bring down this entire party, this whole debauchery thing, and they're going to use the, well, she looks at Lewis and she's basically having a conversation with Lewis, with middleman through Lewis.
Yeah.
And Dubby actually cares about these girls.
Yeah.
And doesn't want to end this in a way that will also end the sorority.
Correct. Yeah. She's like, no, we can't end these people's lives. I mean, they haven't done anything wrong. Yeah. People in sororities may sometimes stereotypically be jerks and things like that.
Yeah, I may think this is dumb, but it's their home.
But yeah. this is their thing, and they weren't doing anything wrong.
Yeah. And so she decides there's got to be another way, and middleman figures it out.
We use the Bioharmonic Universal Multi-Module Emotional Rerouter. It's in his trunk.
The bummer.
I like the fact that they were like, okay, how can we make this into an acronym?
In a later one, they have the Spoil Sport Room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love their acronyms. The HADAR, all of it. But yeah, so the bummer, which looks like all of their other grenades, how any middleman tells these things apart.
Well, I think there was a joke about that in an earlier episode where they got the shipment of that, and it's that one and a different one next to each other. And she's like, how can you tell which one is which? And he's like, how can you not?
Yeah. Yeah, because like one's a concussive stun thing and one's a truth bomb. And yeah, and now they've got a bummer. Dubby rolls the bummer out into the middle of the room. It puts off some light and kind of a pulse wave. And everybody just kind of and wanders out of the party. Like, I love that it works immediately. Then Eleanor, possessing middleman with Ty tied around his head, just college crazy. I like that she's kind of impressed of like, you know what? If this didn't foil my plan, I would actually applaud you for doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you've ruined a whole party with physics.
Yeah. No, and that's actually kind of another thing is, like, I think even at one point, middleman even says in an episode that had she chosen a different path in her life, it's possible she could have even been, could have potentially been like a middleman type person. But she chose evil.
Yeah, because eventually they send her to Greenland. She's too smart to. Yeah. They don't let the brain go. They don't let her go to waste. This leads to one of my favorite things in the entire series, though. Middleman and Dubby have to fight.
Yes, and I love the fact that she's like, "Oh, you want to fight? Well, guess what? One of us has been trained by Sensei Ping, and the other one hasn't."
Muscle memory, bitch.
And it didn't even turn into like a really good fight. It's just a cat fight.
They just slap the crap out of each other like 50 times. It's just they for all of the
build up for that.
Yeah, and all of the fights they've done in the past, like they've done goofy throw each other around dance move type fights before. And yeah, it's just slaps.
This one just turned into a weird slap fight.
And of course, Lewis over there yelling stuff from middleman of like, use the three terrors, and like all the weird Sensei Ping moves we've heard about from previous episodes. And of course, Dubby doesn't really want to hurt him. But middleman finally gets a good punch in on Dubby, and frat bros step up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a frat bro holding a fifth of some kind of liquor and like, you want to hit a girl, bro? Why don't you pick on me?
Yeah.
And I love that Eleanor turns and runs. Like, middleman's body couldn't kick the shit out of everybody there. But she, like, sees the frat guys and, like, oh, and turns and bolts.
Yeah.
I just love the moment of, like, oh, yeah, that's right. Because in your head, you're still Eleanor. Like, this hasn't clicked. She runs to the car, which, of course, recognizes the body. Voice activation offers destinations. And they don't do the if someone asks you if you're a god line. Which I would, like, that's still my favorite thing from Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But it did make me think of it. If you get in a vehicle and one of the things in the list is top secret headquarters,
you say yes.
You say yes.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, of course I want to play global thermonuclear war.
Yeah.
Screw chess. So, like, she says yes to top secret headquarters and the car takes off. So, back at headquarters, Ida figures it out even faster than Dubby.
Do you need anything else for me before I leave for a nice evening with my husband and children?
No. Leave me. Good night.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yep, that's fine.
And I think she even makes a comment like, oh my God, you guys even have a Hadar. Like,
yeah.
I love how the fact that everyone of any intellect, of major intellect, knows what a Hadar is.
Yeah. I also like that Ida's playing Mahjong with herself on a Lazy Susan.
Yeah.
Like, you see people play chess with themselves all the time. It cracks me up that she plays Mahjong with herself. But Eleanor, as she put it, built a quantum processor out of found equipment in a physics lab, and she could definitely hack communications. So she knows Ida's onto her. Her plan is to lock the building down, blow up the Hadar, kill the middleman's body, which will just return her soul to her body.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, is a pretty smooth plan. Cuts back to the physics building, and we've got Dubby trying to race over to reverse the quantum processor, or the quantum thing, I think is as Lewis calls it.
Something about Russia and Ida getting to his body while we go to the physics building to reverse the quantum thingy.
You also have middleman find out at this point that Lacey and Tom, Tyler are dating.
Yeah.
Which Dubby's been kind of trying to keep from him for the episode. She's not gone to crazy lengths about it, but there have been a couple of moments where she's just not said what that phone call was about.
Yeah, because, yeah. A, because he has a thing for Lacey, and B, you know, as we brought up at the beginning, he's apprehensive about Tyler being in Dubby's life in any way, shape, or form. And
I like what finally reveals it, though, is that Allie, who's still with him, just grabs the phone away from Dubby and calls Lacey.
Okay, you know what? I've had about enough of this. Give me your phone. Hey, what are you doing? If you're not going to deal with this... Hi, Lacey. This is Allie. I'm one of Wendy's sisters.
Who?
Omega Theta Nu's sister.
Oh, good Lord. Would you get off the phone?
Wendy is too nice to say anything, but I think that you should know that she really likes Tyler.
What?
And if you were any friend at all, you would back off.
But I asked Wendy, and she said...
Let's go.
Give me that.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm sick of this. If you won't handle it, I will. And she just grabs the phone and calls Lacey and like, this is her sister. Who? Her sorority sister? Like, because Allie has no idea all of this is fake and is still just like completely earnest about it all. And yeah, I thought that was just a great moment. I'm always happy whenever any character just like throws their hands up and just settles something in a scene.
Because they're essentially doing what us, the viewing audience, wants someone to do.
It's the rhetorical version of Harrison Ford pulling the gun in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And just like, yep, nice sword. Bam. I'm tired of this. That's it. I'm telling everyone what's going on in the scene. It works great. It both creates a problem and solves a problem, kind of. And in either way, they don't have time for it. They run over to the physics building. You get a total protonic reversal.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd can go so far overboard with nerd out.
Oh, there's a whole, I use this in quotation, science behind everything in Ghostbusters. Like, there's a reason behind why you're not supposed to look at the trap when it closes. Like, there is a very specific reason that they never go into. And that reason is that if you're looking at the trap, it's going to suck your soul through your eyes because your eyes are the windows to the soul. And so it's kind of one of those things that there's every little thing, regardless of how unimportant or how tiny of a detail it seems, has a full explained backstory. Dan Aykroyd's a very interesting man.
Yeah. So even though he goes too far overboard, he results in turns of phrase that will stick with me for the rest of my life. And almost every stupid jargon word in Ghostbusters is going to be fun forever. I remember being surprised a few years ago when I found out that there's a good level of cosplay and fandom around Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow that just hadn't clicked for me. In years of all the stuff, I mean, you know, you see Star Wars cosplay all the time and, you know, I see all the other stuff from Comic-Con. And it was probably 5 or 6 years ago was the first time that I saw a bunch of people with proton packs where I went, holy crap, you guys spent like a Boba Fett armor amount of time.
Yeah, no, I've actually myself have been debating on whether or not to build a proton pack myself because I kind of want to, but I also don't have the time or the money or the know-how to do it, but I still kind of want to.
I spent a ridiculous amount of time as a child. Anytime my parents, they wouldn't very often let me buy the candy cigarettes. Most responsible parents would not let you buy candy cigarettes.
Yeah.
But anytime I got a hold of one, I immediately tried to stick it to my lip.
Oh, yeah.
Like Dan Aykroyd when he sees Slimer. That hung with me as a kid is like the funniest, coolest thing an adult had ever done. I don't know how that was magically possible. When that cigarette just hung there.
I don't even think that was done on purpose.
So Wendy hits the red button at the physics lab, and it causes the total protonic reversal, which reverses the quantum thing, flips all the souls back.
Yeah.
So back at HQ, Ida has already tackled Middleman and has a trank gun ready when he says, no, I'm back, it's me.
I'm not falling for that one again.
Tranks him anyway. It's like, what's it going to hurt and why not?
I do like the fact, because usually in these episodes, it's like, oh, no, it's me, prove it. And then they do something, it's like, okay, we're good. I just like, nope.
Don't care.
This could be a trick.
By the time Middleman wakes up and they have their postmortem, W and Middleman talk about Lacey and Tyler. And like so many of these postmortems, it doesn't go the scold direction. It's never quite the lesson from the boss that I think it's going to be. There's the end of an episode where W really screwed up and you think he's going to really chew her out for it. And instead he just says, no, you got to have a personal life. And I mean, like they do this a lot. And in this one, he basically gives her the job of being near Tyler.
Yeah.
He tells her he's not happy about it, but he's in your life. Whether he's just in Lacey's life or whether he's in your life, he's in your life now. I kind of thought it was a nice gray area middle line to walk where he doesn't give her permission to date him, which really wouldn't be his to give.
Yeah. And he kind of even says that. It's not my job to tell you who you can or can't date or anything like that.
But he also kind of makes it a little bit of a job that, like, you have to keep an eye on him, though.
Yeah.
So you can't just not be in his life now.
Yeah, it's like he's gotten too close that if you were to disappear from his life entirely, he'd be too suspicious.
Yeah.
So now you have to be there to watch him to make sure he doesn't ever remember those 2 days.
There was a part of me at the end of this episode that thought he would give, like, a full, I was wrong, you know, many blessings upon your house. Or that he would double down and make a point of contention that W would have to push against him next episode or something. And like they were going to spend an episode or two with her fighting to date Tyler.
Luckily, they didn't go that
route. Yeah, and they really don't go either route. Tyler settles into the show.
Yeah.
Everybody just really likes
him. He's just a regular on the show. And it's like his character is actually the only reason I'm super disappointed about there not being a second season. It's because I feel like his character kind of got the shaft.
Yeah.
Because most of the season was without him. And then he comes in and is such a great addition to the show.
Yeah.
While at the same time being, you know.
Think about how often any TV show, sitcom, drama, anything adds a new character that's a love interest of any level.
Yeah.
And it click. I mean, very, very rarely do they gel with the cast where you don't feel like you're the odd man out. You're the one that ought to go away. By the end of the, you know,
yeah,
Tyler really integrates into the main cast so that by the end of the season, I didn't feel like he was and Brendan Hines.
Yeah.
Like he should be in the main cast list by the end of the season because, yeah, Tyler fits. You can have a scene with Tyler, Lacey, and Noser without Dubby there.
Yeah.
And he fits in that group. He looks like he could live in that building almost.
Yeah. And, you know, I that's the biggest, like, that's the biggest complaint I have with there not being a second season is I feel like he as an actor kind of got the short end of the stick because he's in episode 3 and then back in episode 8 and immediately fits in so well. And then there's only like 12 episodes. And so it's just kind of like, okay, well, you know, sorry.
I mean, you find out in parallel universes, he's definitely part of their important crew because he's part of the group that keeps turning up in parallel universes with them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there could have been a lot for young Mr. Hines to do. Back at the sublet, Lacey and Wendy finally have their real conversation about Tyler. And Lacey basically bullies Dubby into going and finding Tyler. Like, no, you go find him now. Don't give me any of this shit.
Yeah. And she's even like, look, it wasn't going to work between us.
Yeah.
He is totally caught up on you and he doesn't even know it.
Yeah, and Lacey admits that there's not a spark, and all he did was talk, like, you're my favorite topic of conversation, but not on dates. That all he did was talk about W all date.
Yeah.
Wendy heads over to Tyler's, which, reasonably certain there's no way for her to legitimately have his address. No, Lacey, she could probably get it off Lacey.
Yeah.
There was a minute there where I was like, you're just going to hope that he doesn't ask how you know where I live.
Yeah.
But Lacey, probably no.
Yeah.
Either way, Tyler walks up holding a to-go bag from the booty chest, a pirate-themed sports bar with scantily-clad waitresses, because they've got good wings, and after the vegan meal, he needed some meat, which is just another tiny, like, shared thing with he and W. We both love Lacey. We'll both go to the vegan restaurant. We're both going to have to go get some food afterwards.
Yeah.
And he and W decide to go off and eat some wings and watch Mora Tau.
Yeah.
And that's how the episode ends, with you knowing that they're soulmates.
Yeah, they're going to get together.
Yeah. Tyler's called them soulmates earlier.
She even kind
it.
Of makes a comment about that in the third episode.
Yeah, that they just click. I really love Tyler and W's romance. I love the implications in the parallel universe. There's so much meat there on their story. Their relationship to each other and what could have become with Tyler's character would have been a highlight in season two for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like the inevitable Netflix revival will address these things.
Hopefully.
That about wraps up the plot for episode 8, the ectoplasmic panhellenic investigation. If you hadn't seen it already, we spoiled the shit out of it for you. Until next time, that's it.
What now? We head on over to Greek Row?
Wish it were that easy.
I know. Strangling hair, walls bleeding.
Oh, those things I can handle. W, I can badge my way into Fort Knox. I can talk my way into Lincoln's bedroom. But a sorority house? When it comes to that forbidden stronghold of femininity, I'm afraid penetration is nearly impossible.
That's not what I've heard about the Omegas. Oh!
The Good Die Young is an independently run podcast produced by Les Weiler and hosted as part of the Permanent Record Network. We can be found on the web at thegooddieyoungtv.com. Les can be found doing weekly television commentary at www.thetvdudes.com. Thanks for listening.